From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Now let's join our host, Jim Williams, on ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. Brian Cochran, Certified Kingdom Advisor and President of John Moore Associates with us. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon.
Always good to have you, my friend.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We're starting off basic today, brother. What is a good investment?
Yeah, so investment management is a big part of what we do in our firm. And what we've learned and what we taught our clients over the years is a good investment can vary from one person to the next. You know, what might be a wise investment for my needs could be a poor investment for yours. So it can vary based on your risk tolerance and timelines, but a good investment in a sense is one that helps you get closer to your goals without putting you in a place where you might actually take a step backward or add risk that is unnecessary or inappropriate for your situation.
Goals aren't always about making money either, are they?
No, I mean, a lot of our clients' goals are more about generosity, stability. You know, it's not always about greed and what makes me the most money. And I think that's one place that many investors might go astray when identifying what is quote unquote a good investment for them, is they might get pulled into hearing what was a good investment for somebody else in the past or what someone else is doing with their funds and how they're saving and investing. And then from that, they can be led astray into investments that are not appropriate for their personal circumstances.
Maybe you'd give us a glimpse into your process as you answer this question, but what are some of the questions a financial planner should ask before they even try to answer this question for an investor?
Right. So we always start with the factors of timeline for your goal. So are you saving for something that's going to require assets in 6 months or 6 years or 40 years. You know, that should dictate what sort of investments could be appropriate, because some of the best investments over a 10-year period may not look so good in the short term. Mm. I think of some of the major high-performing stocks over the last 20 years. Think of a company like Amazon, which I'm not recommending or discouraging today, but if you think about a company like that, it's gone through many periods where it's been down 20, 30, 40% in the short term, on its way to a very strong growth period over a long period. So if you need that money in the next 3 months, it may not be so good to be in a stock that could drop 30, 40%. But if your timeline is long, then you can tolerate that volatility, that uncertainty, to try to get that long-term reward. So as an advisor, the first thing we look at is, tell me more about your goals, and let's align a dollar amount and a timeline to that goal. And then you can overlay other things, things like your values. You know, as a believer, maybe there's a stock that could go up a lot, but maybe they're selling a product or service that is antithetical to your beliefs and you want to avoid such an investment. So even if it makes money, maybe it's not good in the sense of aligning with what's most important to you.
You know, I did never realize this, but there are large, even publicly traded companies that are involved in pornography and all kinds of different things. I had never thought about that till you brought it up on the show.
And one of the exciting changes in the investment industry over the last several years has been the focus on having investment options available to the public that might reflect their values. And that includes what we would call biblically responsible investing, or BRI funds. So there's exchange-traded funds, mutual funds out there managed by companies that provide their own screening process to ensure that if you were to buy a fund, which is a collection of stocks or bonds, that if you were to buy that fund, it won't have anything inside of it that would be, again, against your values. Very important to some people.
Talk to us now about the stock market. How are stock prices leading, not lagging, indicators for the market?
This is a big point of confusion for many newer investors, and something that some more experienced investors still need to learn. And that's the idea that the stock market is always looking forward to some outcome. It is not waiting for something to happen. It's trying to project what's happening next. And when I say what's happening next, what they're focused on is what's happening in the economy, in the industry pertaining to certain stocks that might change the value of this company higher or lower. And most of that comes back to the level of profits and profit growth for that company. So for example, if you look at oil prices right now, they're quite high. So you think, well, I should own oil stocks. Well, if you'd made that decision about a week ago, you might be upset. Because even though oil prices are high, they're actually starting to decline now as demand for oil is waning because of these high prices, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, people are not willing to pay for such high-cost goods. So if you're kind of investing based on what you see today or the news that has been released this morning or last week, you're probably pretty far behind the curve because stock investors are always trying to project what's happening next. Where you get the significant swings, higher or lower, in the stock market is when those expectations are either far exceeded on the positive side or they're missed badly on the downside. And we saw an example of this a couple weeks ago. We've got an updated inflation statistic, and the inflation came in higher than expected. And that was a sign of possible negative things to come for the economy, is that inflation was going to be more and more problematic. And so because of that, the stock market quickly retreated and lost several percent of value in the next several days. And as a result of that, you know, the market had to reset its expectations. But there's always some sort of an expectation, a forecast baked into every stock price.
Brian, this is not a fair question. It's not on our list, but I was just thinking about it as I'm listening to you. So the current administration has made decisions about shutting down oil and gas leases and different things. People believe that's part of the reason gas prices have come up. But there's also been, I don't know if you want to call it COVID relief, but $2 some trillion allocated. And when the United States starts printing money and passing out money, does that have something to do with inflation?
Right, it does. And this is another example where the market is a leading indicator. So early on in COVID, when the economy was first shut down and clearly economic activity was grinding to a halt, that's a big negative. And the market corrected very quickly. It was down 30% in the course of just a few weeks, a very rapid downturn. We were getting 10% down days in the market. I mean, really extreme moves. But on the flip side, the market started to move higher. Now, how could that be? So this was before the economy really recovered, before COVID had subsided really at all. The stock market was up. Actually, by the time we got our first positive GDP, which stands for gross domestic product, basically the first time we saw a report of positive economic growth, the stock market was already over 30% off its bottom.
Wow.
And that was a result of the stimulus you're referring to. So a really good example of how the market's a leading indicator. By the time you saw the good news in the paper or online or on your favorite news outlet in the evening, the opportunity had already passed to some extent. And I think part of the result of that as well, though, all that stimulus that helped the economy recover is exactly what you were saying. It's rippled into higher prices. You can't push $5 trillion out into the U.S. economy while also shutting down supply chains and not expect there to be a supply-demand imbalance. And that's what we've seen. That's what we're facing when you look down at your grocery bill, at your gas bill, and you see these higher prices.
I might be criticized for using the word fundamentals, but you and I are basketball guys.
Mm-hmm.
You have your son Landon here today, and you teach Landon the fundamentals mm-hmm. of playing basketball. The fundamentals of finance are kind of the same. There's not 25 different ways to do it, is there?
No, there's not. And the beauty of the fundamentals, which in our case, we use fundamentals from scripture. So we use actual biblical wisdom, which is beautiful because it doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's timeless and transcendent. And when we say it's transcendent, we mean it's applicable for all people at all levels. So whether you have $50,000 or $50 million, whether you're just getting out of college or you're a government, the same principles hold true. And the first principle we teach our clients is the first key to financial success is to spend less than you make. And the federal government certainly breached that rule by taking on significant debt and creating a lot more dollars in the system. They were spending much more than they made during that COVID period. And so we shouldn't be surprised that when you breach such a fundamental principle that there's a negative side effect.
I wondered if you introduced something in Congress where you said, now we'd like to figure out a way to spend less than we make. There would be looks of confusion.
Yeah, I could imagine a long silence. And actually, the principles that we learned through the Kingdom Advisors organization that you and I have talked about in the past, And one of the drivers of that was Ron Blue, and he actually sat down with Congress one time and explained these principles, clearly to no avail as our national debt has continued to grow. But that's the beauty of them. They're simple principles. They are hard to argue with, but they're not always easy. Spending less than you make, especially now with costs on the rise, yes, may not be easy, as straightforward as that might sound. And so we have to start with those basics. And what's interesting as an advisor trying to coach families and guide families is we have to remind them constantly of the same principles because, you know, our human nature, we're left astray, we're led astray very easily. And we, you know, even if we know these principles in our mind, they don't always stick.
Brian, I'm going to rephrase this question from a listener a little different than they put it because I think it might help people to, mm-hmm, to understand. So when you go and you're looking for a house, there might be a question as to who sets the price for that house. When you go looking for a car, who sets the price for the car? Are stocks priced similarly?
Probably more similarly to houses than cars. They're all subject to what we would call market forces, which is the basic pull of supply and demand. So if you look at what happened in the last couple of years, there was a lot of demand for houses because of all that stimulus we talked about. People needed a place to live.
Yes.
And supply was compromised by a couple of factors. First off, builders kind of had a knee-jerk reaction in the shutdown to pull back their construction. So you didn't have enough homes on the market, and you had a lot of people with money to buy homes. So there was supply demand. So the market forces caused prices to rise, and they reset prices higher. We may start to see the inverse of that happening here with interest rates on the rise. That may compromise the demand, and supply might start to come back up. So it's that market pull that drives the price of stocks, real estate, other market assets.
Give us some examples of maybe what a leading market indicator is and what a lagging market indicator is.
There's actually the Conference Board Leading Economic Indicators Index that we follow. And what that is a combination of about 10 indicators. And so indicators that are leading include things like interest rates, job numbers, things like that. Things that suggest whether there's going to be more capacity for demand and spending in the economy or less. And so if you look at something that's leading, it would be things like earnings forecasts for the S&P 500. You know, what are companies saying their profits might be in the future? Because obviously that's forward-looking.
Mm-hmm.
Lagging indicators could be things like GDP growth. So GDP is a measure of how much the economy grew or shrank. That's something that we find out after everything's kind of been processed and come through. So that's good information to have, but by the time GDP is higher or lower, the stock market's probably already pricing in that activity, and you're probably late to the game if that's how you're making your bets on the market.
My son will be disappointed that I didn't know the answer to this question because he's an auditor. He's a CPA. But is an earnings estimate for a publicly traded company just an educated guess about the company's profitability?
That's a really good way to say it. Yeah, it's an educated guess. It's based on what we know today, what might the profits of this company be in 3 months, 6 months, a year. We actually get forecasts out a couple of years, though we like to say the crystal ball gets a little foggy as you go out a couple of years. And those estimates can shift very quickly as well as economic conditions change. But a lot of what you see in stock prices today is typically a reflection of what does the general consensus of the market, what do all these analysts that are following companies, what do they think the profits might be in this company going forward?
Brian Cochran is with us. He is the president of John Moore Associates. He's a certified Kingdom advisor. We'll be back after these messages. Please stay with us.
John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive.
I have towed many vehicles in for repair, with the customer stating the car just stalled while I was driving. After diagnosing it, I've had to make that phone call many times and state to the customer, you're out of gas and you need to refuel. Many Christians are like that. They need to be refueling daily with God's word in order to keep themselves moving forward and to have the mind of Christ. Dwight L. Moody was once asked why he urged Christians to be filled constantly with the Holy Spirit. He replied, I need continuous and filling because I leak. What gauge do you use in your life to know if you're running on empty of the infilling of God's Spirit?
Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300, or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, John Chitwood at Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT 88.3 FM.
Calvary Chapel New Harvest is located in the heart of Valencia County and serves the community of Los Lunas and the surrounding area. They gather Sunday morning for worship services at 8 and 10, and the Wednesday night service at 7, led by Pastor David Maestas. Located on Main Street, they also provide programs for kids and youth. Find more details at calvarynhll.org.
Celebrate freedom at the Calvary Church annual community-wide event on July 1st. The Kid Zone opens at 5, the stage starts at 7:30, and the fireworks kick off at 9. Bring the whole family and lawn chairs to enjoy a night of worship, a message by Skip Heitzig, and a fantastic fireworks show, all free from Calvary Church. Freedom Celebration on the Calvary Osuna campus, Friday, July 1st. Freedom Celebration, produced and presented by Calvary Church Albuquerque.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Today's show is sponsored in part by Ben Lucero at Indigo Mortgage. 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700. Or online at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect.
Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates. He's one of those guys with a couple of fancy three-letter initials right after his name. Certified Kingdom Advisor is one of those. What's that all about?
Well, we mentioned during that last segment about the Kingdom Advisors Organization, which is a national association of various financial professionals, including financial planners like myself, CPAs, so tax professionals, and estate planning attorneys. And they train us in the application of biblical principles in financial advice. And so the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation is a reflection of the training I've gone through in the application of biblical principles. And it's something we require of all of our advisors, because we believe great advice comes from the merger of timeless, transcendent biblical wisdom with, you know, the technical aspects of what we do, understanding current tax law, understanding the current investment environment, and then merging the two and building relationships with people so they trust us to guide them through the complexities of personal finance.
We talked a little bit about the $2+ trillion rescue plan that the current administration had, getting us out of COVID, and the reaction of the markets was positive, and how that might have contributed a little bit to the inflation that we're experiencing now. But then you said something during the break that I thought was really interesting as Steve was talking to us, and that's the difference between how the Fed acquires money and how the government acquires money.
Yeah, I wish this was more part of high school and college education, is understanding just the general way money works. So two things were happening during COVID that helped stimulate the economy and also cause the inflation that we see today. The first is the federal government wanted to provide support to citizens. So they did that through extra unemployment compensation, PPP loans. There's a lot of things that were provided during that period to help sort of offset the effects of all the shutdowns. They're doing that by taking debt. Basically, the government sells bonds, which are debt instruments. And by selling those bonds, they get more money in their pockets to go and distribute amongst the population or to spend.
That would be like a U.S. Treasury bond.
Treasury bond, yep. So on the flip side of that, what was happening at the same time was the Federal Reserve, which is not, not part of the federal government, technically, was doing their own stimulus, which is a combination of lowering interest rates on the short term, what's called the Fed funds rate. So when you hear the Federal Reserve is changing rates or the Fed's raising or lowering rates, they're changing the very short term rates. That impacts things like your checking account and saving account rates. It affects things that are variable, like credit card rates or home equity line of credit rates are often variable. And then at the same time, they were also basically creating new money. People like to say printing money, but they do it electronically. and then using that money to buy assets off of bank balance sheets, things like mortgages and treasury bonds. In doing so, they push interest rates down, which is why during that period you had such low mortgage rates. So it was really that combination of the two working at the same time that created just trillions of dollars of extra money in Americans' pockets, with at the same time a lack of supply to buy anything. So you had all this demand built up, a lack of supply, and that equaled high inflation.
How does emotion or political sentiment affect the stock market?
You know, the stock market really in the end is a reflection of our internal struggle between fear and greed. We like to say that every stock market correction happens for a different reason, but the reactions are usually the same because it's still human beings that are responding. Mm. So whether it's COVID or the financial crisis or the tech bubble, or, you know, you go back decades and you can find the crisis du jour, but the response often looks pretty darn similar. And so emotion is certainly part of it. And that's a huge part of our job as advisors, sitting down every day with families, is trying to remove the emotional component and focus on what makes the most sense based on that family's personal goals, needs, priorities. Because when it's your own money, it's hard to remove the emotion. There's definitely a connection there. On the political side, I would say in my career, starting back in 06, going through the Obama administration, which really started to divide the country in a lot of ways, and then switching to Trump and now to Biden, we've just seen more and more political divisiveness and people really identify strongly with their politics. I think in that period, the biggest mistake I've seen with money is people integrating their politics into their financial decision making and letting that drive. So what could that look like? That could look like someone who's right-leaning, not wanting to invest when Obama was president coming out of the financial crisis, because they might say, oh, there's no way that a president who is so outside of my values could make the economy grow. On the flip side, we had clients literally in tears in our office wanting to get out of the stock market when Trump was elected in 2016 because they didn't agree with what he was doing. Now, both of those presidents presided over very good periods in the stock market. So either way, those investors were wrong. And we just keep seeing that back and forth, back and forth. So I think the politics and the emotion are very connected because we've become so emotional with our politics.
I had a man tell me this weekend something that you've said. He was almost parroting you on the show. You've encouraged people to stay in the market, not to get out and then try to time coming back in. And his exact statement to me was, I can't figure out when to come back into the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a reflection of, let's go back to the politics we were just talking about. Okay, so you don't like who was elected, so you get out of the market. Oh, well, what do you know? The market might go up. So then when do you get back in? You know, the market's now higher than when you left. When do you get back in? And what we often tell clients if they call us and they have an inclination to sell out of the market, we always tell them that's the easy decision because that will make you feel better in a time of volatility or uncertainty. Oh, I've made a decision that takes away the uncertainty for now. The hard part is the second decision, which is when do I reinvest? And from my experience, even some of the clients we have that are very bright, whether they're engineers at Sandia or very sharp businessmen and women, they never get that right. I mean, honestly, I've been doing this. We serve hundreds of families. We rarely have people panic away from the market, but I can't think of a single instance where someone did that and ended up buying back lower. You know, the only benefit, if you're right now feeling fearful and you were to sell, the only way that would benefit you is if you buy back in lower. So things would have to get worse. And that would mean you'd have to sell right now when you're scared and probably buy when things are even more scary, when the headlines are worse. And people just don't do that. They wait till they start to feel better or the headlines improve. But like we said earlier, the market's a leading indicator. By the time you see the good news,
too late.
You know, the market may be up 20, 30, 40%. And you just, you know, shot yourself in the foot. And that's a great formula for a very poor long-term investment outcome.
Very interesting stuff. Listener question. Can you give us some examples of diversification in an investment portfolio?
So the biblical example of diversification is actually in Ecclesiastes 11. And it says, invest in 7 ventures, yes, in 8. You do not know what disaster may come upon the land. So this is actually one of those biblical principles we focus on. And you look at why. So what's the why behind diversification? Because you don't know what disaster may come upon the land. And so the idea of diversification is to spread out your assets amongst multiple holdings so that if something bad happens to one, it may not impact the other. And what we often see is people think they're diversified when they're really not. Because what they own, they may own different assets, but they may all be correlated assets, meaning that they all move the same way on the same day. Mm. Let me use an example. I talked to a wise Christian business owner about a year ago. Great guy, just fabulous energy, built a good business and sold it in his 30s. I mean, just really a go-getter. And he was getting ready to manage the proceeds of the sale of his business. And I said, well, what are you doing for investments today? Tell me about sort of your values on investing. What are you doing? So he sent me a snapshot of his current portfolio. And he said, I've got a pretty good diversified portfolio. And I said, okay, I look forward to seeing it. He had Microsoft, Apple, Coinbase, which was a primary cryptocurrency platform, and then three cryptocurrencies. And he was shocked when I gave him my opinion that he was probably not diversified. So diversification doesn't mean owning several different assets. He owned several different assets. Mm-hmm. But all of those this year have traded the same direction pretty steeply. So the key with diversification, a good example is if you're going to own stocks of different categories, stocks of different characteristics. You might want to own energy stocks, bank stocks, and technology stocks. You know, owning three technology stocks is not diversification.
Yes.
But also owning assets that aren't stocks at all, owning bonds, owning assets that we fall into the category of alternatives, things like precious metals, commodities, managed futures funds are a popular alternative, real estate. Larger entities like endowments might own things like timberland or agricultural land, things that maybe won't go the same direction as the stock market when it's going down. But also, you know, maybe they're a laggard when the stock market's going up. And a general rule for this is if you look down at your portfolio when things are good and everything's going up, you're not diversified. As investors, we tell our clients we should always have something in your portfolio we should have to apologize for, because otherwise we're not diversified.
That is an interesting statement. We have Brian Cochran. He is the Certified Kingdom Advisor and President of John Moore Associates. We'll be back with more from Brian. I hope you'll stay with us.
Canon Christian Academy understands that selecting a private school to meet the needs of your family is an important one. The mission, vision, and philosophy of any school you consider for your children should be a clear extension of your own personal beliefs and values. As a ministry of Calvary Chapel, Rio Grande Valley, Canon Christian Academy upholds and teaches the doctrines of the Bible and seeks to assist parents in their God-given responsibility to educate their children. Here's Headmaster Sean Gibson.
We have an obligation to make disciples, most especially of our children. And I trust that we will all call on God, that His Spirit might fall upon us, and that we might be the true church, and that we might raise up our children to take the church forward until He comes.
For details regarding job openings and student registration, call 505-859-4041 or visit ccaberlin.com. Calvary Chapel, Puerto Vallarta, under the leadership of Bill and Renee Martin, continue to reach out to the children of Calvary Chapel Mission School. Other ministry includes street evangelism, various mini festivals, dramas, one-on-one evangelism, and food and gift distribution. They also have a coffee bar and bookstore in the church. This draws in people right off the street who may not usually frequent a church. In a recent conversation with Bill Martin, he shared the need for others to consider coming alongside them, either for long-term or short-term outreach opportunities.
Even if you come down with one or two people and watch the work, go with the evangelism team, watch them, work with them, pray with them, and it'll change your vision. You start going, wow, God is working, God is doing things.
For more information on the ministry of the Martins at Calvary Chapel, Puerto Vallarta, visit the mission page at calvarynm.church.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates in studio. Brian, we were talking about examples of diversification, and I've heard it said that mutual funds might be an example, but you've corrected me on that.
Right. They can be. So let's be clear there. So let's first sort of define a mutual fund. So a mutual fund is an investment you can participate in where you buy a fund rather than a single stock or a single bond or single other asset. And so it's a collection of stocks or bonds. And sometimes you can buy one mutual fund and be very broadly diversified. Some mutual funds are designed for that, where they will own stocks or bonds or both in many different categories. So in the purchase of one fund, you can be broadly diversified. Great example of that is if you have a 401k at your employer, many provide what's called a target date retirement fund, which is a retirement fund that is aligned with risk relative to your target retirement date. So if you're 40 years from retirement, it might be a 2060 fund. If you're 10 years from retirement, it would be called a 2030 fund. And then they will blend in various stocks and bonds. But you cannot assume that just because you own a mutual fund, you're properly diversified, because some mutual funds are what's called sector funds, where they own only stocks within one sector, such as a energy sector fund, which would only own various stocks in the energy sector. So again, you're not really diversified, even though you might own 50 or 100 companies within that single mutual fund, because all those energy stocks are likely to trade very correlated. Again, they'll go up together and then also they'll go down together. Maybe at different levels, but they're moving the same direction. And so this is one of those areas where people might listen to someone who says, "Hey, Jim, I just bought this awesome energy fund. It's been killing it the last year. You should buy it." Okay. And you say, "Okay, great. Well, what's been good the last year may not be good going forward. May not be appropriate because energy funds can be quite volatile and you might want the money in the short term." And so this is one of those examples where you think you're diversified, you're not. You think you're in what we defined earlier as a good investment, maybe it's not. And so this is where our role as professional advisors fits in, is helping people kind of pull away from the basics, the high level that they see in the finances, and dive deeper into making more wise investment decisions.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but of course the war in Ukraine, everybody's mad at Russia. They don't want to buy Russian oil. They're mad at OPEC. They don't want to buy anything from Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. But aren't the companies like Exxon kind of getting oil from all of those places?
They were. Many of those countries, when Russia invaded Ukraine, many of them pulled out their operations. The interesting part as a global economy is, even if we don't want to buy Russian oil and Europe decides not to buy Russian energy, there may be folks like, let's say, China that are willing to purchase energy products from energy commodities from Russia. So there's a great book I just read called The World for Sale that's all about these commodity brokers and how it's kind of a sideways industry in a way, because they're helping make these types of deals, whether it's ethical or not. But it's a complex marketplace.
Well, this is a commodity question, listener question. Should Christians hold gold and silver coins as a hedge against inflation, natural disaster, and government corruption?
What a common topic right now, because we seem to be facing a lot of those things lately, those risks. You know, gold has often been pitched as an inflation hedge, and at times it has proven to be that. Gold this year, even though inflation's been through the roof, gold has not performed very well this year. It's outperformed the stock market. So in terms of, is it a diversification tool? Possibly. What I'll tell people in regards to that specific question is, yes, a small hedge is appropriate. Gold can be a wonderful diversifier. Where I get concerned is people start putting 20, 30, 50, 100% of their investments into one asset class, whatever that asset class is. And if it's precious metals like gold and silver, then that can have the same risk as any other category. One thing people don't always understand, they think gold and silver are very safe, but gold and silver over the long term has actually had the same or higher volatility than the stock market. They just don't move the same way on the same day. This specific question I thought was interesting because it actually mentions physical gold. It didn't say, should I own a gold mutual fund or a gold exchange traded fund, but should I own physical gold? And there are own trade-offs there. You have to store it safely. Buying physical gold, can it be expensive?
Throw in there, Brian.
Go ahead.
How would you store gold safely at your house? I guess you'd have to do a safe deposit box or something.
Some people do safe deposit boxes. Some people just have a very good safe in their home that's well hidden and secured. Some people pay other providers to, sort of a more extensive version of a safe deposit box. But one of the biggest downsides there is just the cost of transacting gold and silver physically can add up. You have to find a reputable dealer that's not going to increase or decrease the prices too much. There's always something called a spread when you're buying assets like that, which is the difference between the market price and what the dealer is selling, and or the market price and what they're going to pay you for it, because that's how they make their money, right?
So, and there are ways that you can also talk about where you don't actually own the physical gold, but what you're buying is backed by those commodities.
Mm-hmm. And that can be a better alternative, especially if something like a retirement account or something where you're trading investments. There are funds, it's just not appropriate for me to recommend specific funds in this circumstance, but there are funds that trace or track the value of gold or silver. So if you're just looking for the price participation, you think gold is going to be worth more tomorrow than it is today, buying physical gold may not be the best way to do that. But it is easy and cheap to participate in just gold funds, exchange-traded funds, mutual funds and such. And some are just benchmarked to the gold or silver prices. Others actually are backed by owned silver and gold that they're storing for you.
Brent, I think there's people, I'm just speculating here, that the person that asked this question is worried that there's going to come a time where the banks are closed, mm-hmm. you know, doomsday kind of thinking.
Sure.
And you're not going to be able to get your money out of the stock market. You're not going to be able to go to your safe deposit box at the bank. Everything's closed. And they're asking whether or not we should have something on hand. Mm-hmm. I know all the safe manufacturing companies are going to like this part of the discussion.
Yeah. And there's, again, everything with finance has trade-offs, right? So if, I think it is wise to have some cash on hand, probably enough, at least enough for 2 weeks of just sort of household expenses if you had to transact to buy food and basic stuff without the banking system and fully functional. Where, you know, that would be a tough situation for a lot of families. So having some cash on hand is wise, just in the case that, you know, there's some sort of a major infiltration into the banking system by hackers or something like that. I think what you have to be careful is delineate between some emergency preparedness versus making significant financial decisions that dictate your long-term goals mm-hmm. based on, you know, your prediction that something bad's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So early on in COVID, you know, our own family, we were moving, we were going through a lot of transition. We pulled aside a lot of cash and just held it just in case. I mean, who knew what was going to happen at that point? And that could extend beyond just cash. It could be a little bit of food to store for a couple of weeks, water, you know, supplies like that. And you saw people who hadn't done that sort of rushing to do that early mm-hmm. in COVID, that was sort of the comical toilet paper shortage, right?
Yes.
Apparently that was going to be the currency of the day if things really got bad. So I think if you want to do those things for disaster preparedness, that's not really a financial planning decision as much as just a good lifestyle choice. Mm. Where I worry is when we have clients come in and they've just gone down these incredible rabbit holes of sort of doomsday predictions, and now they're pulling out all of their retirement accounts, paying tax on it, putting it in cash, buying coins. That's a pretty extreme scenario. You're putting all your eggs in that doomsday basket if you want to say it that way. You're not diversifying. You're putting everything you have that direction. They might think they're being safe, but if you're paying taxes on the way out of those assets, and then if with inflation at, you know, 8%, 9%, you're not earning anything on those cash dollars that are sitting in your bank. So they're basically deteriorating.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you've said on this show many times, we're not to live our lives in fear.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's absolutely true. And being prepared and being fearful are two very different things. You know, that, you know, are we being thoughtful about this? Are we being concerned and wise? Or are we being fearful and overly emotional? And what we often tell people, if you find yourself getting kind of wound up into that fearfulness, just take a media break. Take a little media sabbatical is what we call it.
Wow. Amen.
And just whatever it is you're reading or listening to, step away from it for even just a few days. You'd be amazed how much clarity you get. I mean, I started doing that a couple of years ago and I never went back. Mm. I used to listen to different talk radio, watch cable news. I was reading different articles, Twitter. All those are out of my life now and I feel so much better. I don't feel ill-informed. I don't feel under-informed, but I don't have that overriding anxiety that those different outlets can provide.
Brian, you're in a field where you constantly have to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting what you just said, because we're all watching all these media outlets talk about these things, and that's why sometimes I let you know that I'm frustrated, because I see all these gold brokers and stuff with these doomsday advertisements like, oh, you better buy this or that, or you're not going to have anything, it's the end of the world kind of scenarios. And you just encourage us to stay the course, have a good financial plan. What are some of the ways you stay on top of things? I mean, I know you're doing seminars. You make many of those available to the public at johnmoore.com/insights. And we really appreciate all that information you give us.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's about really being thoughtful about your filter in terms of what voices are you listening to? What content are you reading? And that's where I think a lot of people fall short, is they end up listening to the wrong voices that are creating fear, concern, panic, and often with some sort of ulterior motive, some sort of benefit to them. So those gold brokers, my thing is always, if gold's such a good investment, why are you selling it nonstop? Why wouldn't you be hoarding it? You know, these gold brokers are making it money on the transaction, right?
Yes.
And they make money whether you do or not. So a lot of it's about controlling, you know, your inputs, you know, what voices are you listening to? And I like to look for wisdom. And what does wisdom look like? Wisdom comes from people who are very consistent in their messaging. It comes from scripture, you know, timeless, transcendent wisdom, as I defined it before, things that don't change. What I worry about is there's certain people who just hype up whatever the hottest investment is or push whatever the latest fear tactic is, and they're jumping around all over the place. Now, where's the wisdom in that? Where's the consistent message here? And I think where we've seen Christians be led astray is they will become emotional because they get pulled astray by these negative voices, and they'll make a big rash decision about their personal finances, but then wrap it in the context of, this is good stewardship. You know, I'm trying to be a good steward by taking all my money out of the market and sticking it under the mattress. I think that's good stewardship. Well, I don't know if that checks my boxes for good stewardship, because you're reacting out of fear, or anger or concern rather than wisdom. So I think that's key. And what I would say, another good filter is, if the voices you're listening to about investing, about finance, about life, raise up a significant negative emotion in you, you're just feeling your blood pressure rise, you know, it's making you anxious, that may not be the right voice for you.
Yes.
I mean, there's so much wisdom out there that can still make a good point about being cautious or being thoughtful. But if you're getting that emotional response, that's probably what they want. They're probably playing your emotions to keep you listening to their message, watching their ads, whatever it might be.
I'm going to give you an example of two people. Both were, I would just call them average savers, mm-hmm. pretty high wage owners, low six figures, didn't live beyond their means, but enjoyed money, probably could have saved more. And both of them inherited a big chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, and I'll never forget this, I mean, was the most laid back human being ever, just working, trusting the Lord, doing all this different stuff. But as soon as he inherited this money, he was a train wreck. Couldn't figure out what to do, where to go, felt guilty if he thought about, well, maybe we ought to, you know, pave that driveway into our property up at the cabin or what. And then all of a sudden felt all this remorseful thoughts about, you know, this and that. And it was quite a bit of money. So I was able, and this course is way before I met you, but I directed him to a financial planner. And here's how I qualified it. I said, the guy I'm going to send you to is not going to let you spend money. Now, it's your money, and he's going to tell you that, but he's not going to let you spend it. He has this, I want you to do this and this and this, and create this inheritance for your children, et cetera. And so that's a balance between you two. And he was able to return to his normal personality after I sent them up.
And I see that. I mean, I see, as I mentioned before, we've had clients come in after political changes where they're literally in tears. And when we're at that emotional state, our IQ, when we're under stress like that, our IQ actually declines. We don't make good decisions under stress. We're just not wired that. It's not, God didn't create us to work well under stress and panic and fear. That's why he's constantly telling us throughout scripture, fear not. You know, we make better decisions when we're calm, thoughtful, you know, and that's a big part of a advisor's job, whether it's a professional advisor like me or just wise counsel from a friend of yours that you know has been a good steward. And you just say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this and that. let me run it by you, and they'll be a good sounding board.
Brent, I was thinking that we're talking about individual families. Like maybe we're talking about the Cochran family. I'm wondering if we should be doing any financial planning for our extended family with us. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about that?
Well, we work a lot with multiple generations of families. We have, I don't know how many families that have three generations, but we have a few that were in the fourth generation of serving the same family since John Moore started in the industry in the 80s. And that's one of the great privileges we have. And the beauty of that is we can be the conduit and the facilitator to teaching the principles that made generation one and two successful, teaching those principles to the next. And when we don't get that opportunity or we fall short there, it is heartbreaking for us. We just had two sons who inherited wealth and kind of went off the rails and totally breached all the values and principles their mother used to build their wealth. And she was a longtime client and passed away. And we tried to use the same principles with them and didn't take. So I think having that, that really intentional conversation about money can be helpful. And some of the greatest families, you know, Christian families who manage big wealth have done that. I think of the Hobby Lobby family is famous for it. The Kathy family who manages Chick-fil-A. They're very intentional about who's invited into the family as in-laws, and everybody is on the same page from a values perspective, and they all get educated in the ways of the family.
That's really interesting stuff. We're going to take a break, but before I do that, I want to let everybody know that CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque is having their Walk for Life August 13th. It's a Saturday. I want you to get that on your calendar. Just a month or so away, and I think you'll have a lot of fun going out for the Walk for Life. That's for CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque. We'll be back with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
Trials, temptation, and the tongue. Those are the mega themes of three booklets from Lenya Heitzig that we're making available this month at connectwithskip.com. Here's Lenya with more on this bundle.
Don't tempt me. I hand you the keys to unlock the thoughts, circumstances, and fears that can cause you to give in to temptation. And in Speak No Evil, I encourage you to avoid setting fires with your words and instead use them to bring showers of blessing.
Lenya Heitzig's booklets, Don't Tempt Me, Speak No Evil, and Happy Trials, provides help, hope, and encouragement in dealing with life's challenges. This bundle of three booklets are yours for a gift of $20 or more to help keep this Bible teaching ministry on the air. Get yours when you give today by calling 800-922-1888 or give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer. That's connectwithskip.com/offer.
Hello, I'm Morgan Jackson with Faith Comes by Hearing. Recently, my father asked me, what language did Adam and Eve speak? I told him probably Chinese, thinking of China's massive population. My dad said, no, there's only one language, the language of God. Actually, the Bible says at one time, everyone spoke one language, until at Babel, languages were mixed up and scattered like a large marble ball busted into pieces. Today, there are 7,140 pieces of God's language. So no one needs a translator to talk to God, but people need the Word of God translated into the piece of God's language they speak. The Kakwa people, with only 300 speakers, needed to hear God's Word. And when they heard it in their language, they exclaimed, He's from among us! Join me in praying that we may have audio scriptures in every language needed by 2033.
To read more stories like this one you heard today, go to faithcomesbyhearing.com.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
It should have been the perfect robbery. The thieves disabled the alarm, put four dogs to sleep, took a door off its hinges, and entered the art gallery in Milan, Italy. Trying to work quickly, they took more than 25 oil paintings, but because they didn't know anything about art, they took the paintings by students and left authentic paintings by Van Gogh, Picasso, and Monet. The inspector said if they had only known the masterpieces, these thieves could have gotten away with a huge fortune. You see, people who are not educated in art appreciation can easily confuse imitations with the real thing. So it is with the many things in life. The authentic is often confused with a cheap imitation, like religion and God. Religion is the counterfeit for a real and personal relationship with God. Don't mistake religion for God.
For information on books and other resources by Steve Russo, visit the Real Answers website, realanswers.com.
This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Brian Cochran, Certified Kingdom Advisor and President of John Moore Associates in studio. We've talked to Brian very frequently. Brian, you're gracious to always give us your time. We have 10-minute updates with you almost weekly, and then you're with us about an hour every 4 or 5 weeks. I'm glad to have you in your new house here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, we are settling back in New Mexico after a couple years away, and it's good to be back. It's kind of funny, though. We've been in the Northwest, and it rained like crazy this spring up there, even more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to the day we moved, the movers were getting poured on. And then we come down here and
you brought the rain
on.
With you.
So I think they had the rain clouds packed with the truck because it was pouring on us yesterday, moving stuff in the house. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wish there was an update about the fires as the rain is helping with that, obviously. But we have just been decimated by fires and the people and communities. You know, as we talk about disasters and things, some of us are not touched by that. But right here in our fine state, a lot of people have been touched by that kind of stuff, Brian.
Yeah, and it's always amazing that to see the community respond. We've had a few clients doing different volunteer efforts around the fires. One was an engineer, so he was down in Ruidoso helping save costs for those homeowners by helping them figure out those who had their homes destroyed, working with a nonprofit to help them take those homes down and get ready to prepare a new build, which can cost tens of thousands of dollars through, you know, a traditional professional service, but this nonprofit was doing it. So it's really fun to see people respond in times of crisis and show that heart for service.
My daughter Abby was up at the Salvation Army event that was up in one of Coronado Center or one of these places here in Albuquerque, and she said that the turnout for people bringing everything from water bottles to blankets to you name it was just incredible.
Yeah, it's good. Good sense of community when that happens.
Yeah, people are very generous. So I want to ask you about education. A lot of people listening have children. There's a 529 plan. Is that probably the best tax advantage way to save for your kids' education?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best options for tax advantaged accumulation, and we use that for our own children, so I'm practicing what I preach there. It's not the best tool for everybody because there is a little bit of restriction that has to be taken into account, primarily that if you invest in that 529 and those assets grow and you end up using those funds for things outside of education, mm-hmm. expenses outside of education, then you can be penalized and taxed on the growth.
Gotcha.
But if you do use it for education, what a great opportunity to grow assets, on a tax-free basis. And, so we recommend it. And one of the things, that we really enjoy is, you know, many times we're starting these education plans because the grandparents are clients of ours and they're saying, hey, I've got a new grandchild. I'd like to help them out. What can I do? And we set them up so then they have an account they can contribute to. So, I have two sons. We have way too many Legos. We have way too many toys in the house. My son's here with us today, probably arguing against that. But on a birthday or on Christmas, rather than buying more stuff for kids who maybe already have plenty, the grandparent can then make a contribution to the education account and let that grow for the future. So that's been really nice over the years to see those not only grow, but then walk through that with clients where their kids are then using those funds for education.
And I've heard of many families where aunts, uncles mm-hmm. are all contributing for the benefit of the children.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And again, some of the trade-offs, you could have taxes if you use the money for something outside education. You are typically investing in market assets, so the value is going to go up and down. But they do make it pretty simple to invest appropriately for the right age of your child. So if you have a 1-year-old, they can be more aggressive because they may have 16, 17 years before they go to college. And as they get closer, those funds would become less and less risky right before the money is required. But great tool, an important part of savings. The one caveat I'll throw on that that's a principle we teach is some new parents get so excited about that 529 opportunity and they have this new kid that they love and they want to save for, that they do that in lieu of saving for their own retirement or in lieu of paying down debt or having an emergency fund. So if you don't have an emergency fund yet, doing a 529 is out of order. You know, you need to get your emergency fund set first, then start saving at the right pace for your retirement. We often use the analogy of when you're in an airplane and they do the little safety talk at the beginning. What do they say? The oxygen mask drops down, put it on yourself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So get your mask on first, you know, start saving for yourself first. Because at the end, if you don't have enough for retirement, there's no such thing as a retirement loan. But if you don't have enough for your kids' education, they do have the option of taking on some debt, if they really had to, or working their way through college. It's hard to work your way through retirement because sometimes we retire because we cannot work, not because we're choosing not to work.
Yes.
So focus on your short-term emergency funds, then start building your retirement, then start looking at those education plans.
You know, and a lot of people that might just be starting off in the workforce may not be thinking about making stock investments, but they kind of are because it's likely there's a 401k, mm-hmm. and you always encourage people to get involved with that.
Yeah, often your 401k is going to be an easy option to implement because it comes right out of your paycheck, so the money saved before you have to make the decision to save it, and it's kind of taken off the top. Also, many 401ks, especially if you're at a big employer, the costs of the underlying investments are discounted because you're part of a bigger group of investors. So that's really wonderful. And oftentimes there's also the benefit of a matching contribution from your employer. And you never want to leave that match on the table. One of the things that just drives me nuts as an advisor is you get a downturn like this, which for the younger investor is a buying opportunity. This is a good opportunity to buy stocks while they're on the decline. And I'll have young people stop their 401k contributions because they're worried about the market. And in doing so, they're not only missing the opportunity to buy stocks in decline, they're also missing the opportunity to gain a match from their employer. So such an important contribution towards your retirement, getting that match. It's almost like a guaranteed return on your investment in a form, because for every dollar you put in, you're going to get something back from the employer. It's really a wonderful opportunity.
Brian, what's your intention with johnmoore.com/insights tab?
Yeah, so we've run that insights page for several years now, and that's where we place all of our content. That could include blog posts, webinars that we record, so things we provide to our clients. We then capture that and share it with the general public. And sometimes that's our own internal speakers. Sometimes that's external speakers who we bring in to share on different topics. But the intent there is just to be a source of education. You know, a lot of people use their blog to drive new business. If that happens for us, that's great. But if no one ever came to us as a client, but they made better financial decisions because of the education we provide, I think it'd be well worth it. It also gives us something that if we're hearing the same questions again and again, or the same concerns again and again for clients, we say, okay, this is clearly a prevailing issue right now. Mm-hmm. So let's get our answer captured on that. And then if someone else asks, we can answer the question personally and then also send them a resource that can be shared amongst the community. Because a lot of times we're all worried about the same things.
Can you think of a time that a client came to you maybe 2 years after a shaky event like we're in right now, mm-hmm. and said, Brian, I'm so glad I stayed the course because we ended up doing well?
Oh, it happens frequently. And I think that takes some humility on their part, because usually what that means is they were asking us to do something that was not in their best interest, and we talked them out of it. And they're usually out of humility coming back and saying, hey, you know, I was wrong, you were right. And in those moments, we always go back to, you know, what's the source of our advice? It's scripture. We're not making these things up. It's not my infinite knowledge and education and wisdom, but it's the wisdom and the consistent messaging of God's word, along with our processes that we lean on. So it's not about us always having to be right all the time. We always lean back on those principles. And that's the advantage we have as advisors, that all kingdom advisors have, is we're not only operating on our own wisdom, which can be shaky at times.
With about a minute and a half left, what are the three most common mistakes people make?
With investing in particular, yes. I would say investing without a specific purpose in mind. So again, your goal should have a dollar amount and a timeline. You don't have those things.
Like you might be saving for college for your kids, mm-hmm. and you might be saving for a retirement at 65, yep. and you might want to buy a house in 10 years.
Yep, they can have different timelines and different objectives. So number one, not having a specific purpose. Number two, we talked about it earlier, letting things like politics interrupt your investment decision making. And then number three, I'd say not appreciating the importance of process. Okay, so if you have a goal, you keep the disruption out of the way along the way. Don't let the politics lead you astray. And then last, make sure you're investing on a process where you have a consistent way that you're making investment decisions. Those three things combined are a good formula for success.
As usual, wonderful time with you, Brian. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
My pleasure, Jim.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.